Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was married for 30 years, in that relationship for 32, and we didn't find out until our 29th year of marriage that we were a neurodiverse couple. And I've been divorced since 2018, and together we have an amazing adult daughter who's thriving and doing fantastic. And I want to wish all of you a happy new year. It's the beginning of 2024. And I always look at the new year as an opportunity to kind of look back on what has worked in my life and what I'd like to change moving forward. And to also think about how I want to serve the neurodiverse love community and what I can do to help bring more resources to the world. I now know that there are folks from 74 countries listening to the podcast, which is absolutely amazing. And we're about to hit 200,000 downloads of the podcast. And we're getting up to almost 200 episodes. I think we're very, very close to that. So today I wanted to talk about an issue that I hear a lot of people attempting to address and having some difficulty, and a few other issues that I think are really important as we move forward into this new year. So the topics I want to address are letting go of hope and letting go of fear of change, also going through grieving and what that might look like, and then transforming into the person you want to be and letting go of any shame or guilt that you have. So I know these are issues that probably a lot of the listeners have either thought about, talked about. If you've attended one of my support groups, these things often come up, these issues often come up. Whether you've come to a support group for the non-autistic neurotypical partners or the support group that I'm now doing with Jody Carlton for mixed neurotypes, or you've come to the couples support group. These are some of the things that I think a lot of folks are dealing with. And so I wanted to talk about them as we start this new year. And so the first one is letting go of what I'm going to call being inappropriately hopeful. And a lot of folks talk about, you know, I'm still holding on to hope that things can change in my neurodiverse relationship, that I can accept what is, or that my partner will change because they said they'll change. And what oftentimes happens is that hope, because I'm labeling it inappropriate hope, turns into a lot of suffering for one or both of the partners. And I think the reason it's inappropriate hope, or I'm calling it that, is because when we're hopeful that things will get better, not that our partner will necessarily change, but that we'll both maybe work on things that haven't been healthy for us as a couple or as individuals, that we're both working on making improvements, but that we're hopeful that that change will be consistent, that all of a sudden things that were really difficult in our relationship will change overnight. Or if our partner says they will work on something and we see some change, some gradual change, and then all of a sudden they revert back to, you know, how they treated us previously or how they communicated with us previously. And so I think that one of the things that I learned in my marriage and definitely during my separation was that I was very inappropriately hopeful. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. So when my ex and I separated, we had agreed that it would be a 6-month separation. And what started as a 6-month separation turned into almost a 2.5-year separation. And I will tell you, during that time, my nervous system was so dysregulated. I was in a almost constant state of fight or flight. I was crying almost every single day. I was an emotional basket case. But every time my ex or my husband at the time did something that I wanted, to be part of our relationship and our marriage moving forward, I was hopeful. And oftentimes what would happen is he would go back on his word. He would say he was going to do something and do it once and then go back to the way in which he had been previously. He unfortunately became very untrustworthy, and I began to lose trust in his word. And even though I still loved him very much, I think I became inappropriately hopeful. I was not listening to my own body. I was not listening to my own intuition. I was not listening to my own gut. And I think one of the reasons for that was I was afraid of change. And that was the second area that I wanted to talk about. I could not let go of the fear I had of ending, you know, a 30-year marriage. I had invested so much time, so much love, so much energy, we both had, into our marriage. And I was so scared that I would never find the things that were good in our relationship, in another relationship. I was so scared about, you know, I was in my 50s, what it would be like to be, you know, dating with the goal of a long-term relationship. And all those things really scared me so much that I was afraid of fully owning what I wanted, who I was, what I dreamed of for the future. And I kept holding on to hope every time I saw one movement in a positive direction. And I guess what I was looking for was more consistency and more trustworthiness. And by holding on to hope repeatedly, inappropriate hope, I suffered tremendously. And as some of you may know, I was very depressed and probably more anxious than I've ever been in my whole life, and actually went on an antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication, and it was Cymbalta, and I was on that for about 4.5 years. I'm no longer on it. So I think I had to understand that I had to face my fear, the fear of change, the fear of the unknown, and realize that there were some things that I wanted to see improved in myself, in my husband at the time, and in our relationship, and they were never going to change. Some of those things were never going to change. And I held on to hope for way too long. And because I did, our separation lasted way too long. We had said that the 6-month separation, at the end of the 6-month separation, we would determine if we were going to both come back into the marriage. And my ex actually signed another 6-month lease, or a year lease, I don't even remember. Even though we talked about, you know, him coming back into our marriage and into our house. And at that time, I should have said, okay, you've made a choice. Your decision is to live on your own. I want to be in a marriage, living under the same roof with you. I should have ended our marriage at that time. Because of the inappropriate hope, I kept going. And I know I struggled and suffered, and I'm guessing he did too. So I think those are two really important things that we need to think about as we are trying to discern the next steps in our neurodiverse relationships. The third thing I want to talk about is grieving. And I think this is something that a lot of us go through, and we don't realize maybe we're going through it. And we may get sick, you know, physically, we may have mental health issues. And the grieving process is something that I think we all have to go through when we find out either that we are neurodivergent, or our partner is neurodivergent, or that we're in a neurodiverse relationship, because the things we dreamed of having with our partner and in our life before we knew that we were in a neurodiverse relationship may not be possible And because they may not be possible because of our different neurotypes, we need to give ourselves an opportunity to grieve that. And hopefully you have a support system, people that you can talk to, ways in which you can get through the different stages of grieving. But if you cannot, then there's an opportunity for you to find a therapist or a coach who understands neurodiversity, and you can go to my website, neurodiverselove.com, and you can absolutely find a list of lots of therapists and coaches who've been on the podcast who can probably help you with this. But I think with the grieving process, you understand that some of the things that you had hoped for and dreamed of in your relationship, because they may never happen, whether it's because of your differences or it's because that you or your partner are just no longer willing to do the work or do the work that's going to create a healthy relationship with the partner that you're with now. Grieving can be so healthy and healing. And I think for me, as I went through my grieving process, after I realized that my marriage was on the verge of ending at the end of our separation, oh my gosh, I cried probably multiple times a day, every single day for I can't even tell you how long. When I knew we were getting a divorce and during our separation, when I knew we were getting a divorce and then after our divorce, I don't know how long it really, the grieving process, how long I was engaged in the grieving process, but it took me a while. And there is no timeline. But I will tell you, if you feel like the grieving is impacting a lot of your activities of daily living, if you find you can't get out of bed in the morning, if you find that you can't go to work or you can't, you know, parent your children or, you know, you don't want to visit with friends, I think that's totally normal in the beginning. But when it becomes life altering in a lot of negative ways, I think that's when you need to get help from a professional who can help you get through the grieving process to the end, which is accepting that you are in the life that you're in and that you get to choose next steps that are healthier, and you get to remember hopefully the good things that were in your past with your partner and in your life, and you can move on and accept that things are changing and that you have an opportunity to build a new life for yourself, whether you stay in contact with your partner or not. And I think the last piece that I want to talk about is transforming into the person that you want to be and letting go of any shame or guilt that you have about who you've been in your life or who you've been in your relationship. So I will tell you that I did have a lot of guilt. I have talked about this on the podcast before. I was a screamer in my marriage. And when I got upset at my ex-husband, I would scream. And I remember him saying to me, not all the time, I didn't always scream, but I screamed a lot more than I should have. I didn't know how to regulate my nervous system. I have learned how to do that. And oh my God, it has been a game changer and a life changer. So I highly recommend working on that, maybe with a somatic therapist or a coach who has expertise in somatic healing. That is really what has helped me tremendously. So I think that I didn't feel shame, but I did feel a lot of guilt about the screaming and the yelling and my lack of patience, to be honest with you. So I had to heal from that. I had to release that guilt from my body. And some of you may be feeling the same things. You may be feeling guilt about things you've said to your partner, ways you treated them, you know, your screaming, your meltdowns, shutdowns, how you have functioned in the relationship that you're in currently, or you're in the process of ending or have ended. And I think guilt is normal. It is a normal part of life. But when you're feeling shame about who you've been and what you've done, that's where it can be really debilitating. And I say that because shame, when you feel shame, you don't feel adequate. You don't feel worthy. You don't feel good about yourself as a person, not just about the way in which you talked, communicated, acted, behaved. And I think, again, you may want to explore getting help with that, because shame does, all of these feelings and emotions live inside our body. And if you haven't read the book, The Body Keeps the Score, I highly recommend it. It talks about how all of our emotions and our feelings do stay stuck in our bodies until we heal that. But letting go of shame, letting go of guilt is the beginning of the transformation process, or it was for me, and it can be, I think, for a lot of people out there. And understanding what it was that you did that you maybe could have changed or done differently and can do differently in your future relationships, or if you stay in the relationship with your partner, that relationship. I think we all have an opportunity to transform, but it takes understanding, you know, that we've been holding on to that inappropriate hope, and that we are no longer maybe accepting what is, whether it's who we are or whether it's who our partner is, or what can or cannot change, or what we will not change, or what our partner will not change. It's accepting that there's going to be some fear when we know there's a big change ahead, whether it's an individual change or our relationship is changing or how we relate to each other is changing. That fear is totally, totally normal. But we have an opportunity to work through it, and we have an opportunity to come out of that fear and have a more healthy relationship with ourselves and our partner if we're staying in the relationship. And by grieving, we have an opportunity to let go of some of the pain, let go of some of the inappropriate hope, get to a point where we can accept what is and move forward. And all of this is part of transformation and transforming ourselves and our current relationship or any future relationship that we have. I think for me, at almost 60, I am probably the best version of Mona that's been out there. And I don't think if you had talked to me 5, 6, 7, even 10 years ago, I would have ever thought that this is where I would be at this point in my life. I've been very, very fortunate to have created the NeuroDiverse Love community, and it has been part of my healing. And I get every single week, I get emails or DMs from folks that have shared with me how my story and the things that I have gone through, and by sharing openly and transparently, that I have, you know, contributed to saving a marriage, which I don't think I'm responsible for, but people send me emails like that. And I think what's responsible for saving your marriage is you and hopefully your partner understanding each other better, understanding your neurotypes, understanding your needs and wants and desires and dreams, and knowing that you're both very capable of transforming. And while that transformation is going on, I think the thing that I wish I had done better is to be patient with myself, because I think I wanted the changes to occur a lot quicker than they were capable of occurring. You know, there is no timeline really for transformation and healing. It probably takes as long as it takes, and maybe it's a process that I'll be involved in for the rest of my life. I really don't know. I think when I stop learning, I'll probably leave this earth. I'm going to continue to learn the rest of my life. But transforming into the best version of yourself really, for me, has meant that I've needed to let go of so many things. So many things that I didn't understand, so many things that I did wrong, so many things that I would change if I had a magic wand and could go back, but I don't. And really accepting that I am a work in progress. And if we can accept that we're probably always going to be a work in progress, and that our partner's perspective is their perspective, and it doesn't have to be our perspective, that their way of living and being that works for them and is healthy for them doesn't have to be like ours. But when we can have grace and space for each other and value each other's needs and dreams and process for transforming, I do think that things can get better and that we can all begin our healing journey. None of this is easy. None of it is easy. And I wish that I had a book on how to go through this process after being in a neurodiverse relationship for 30 years and not knowing for 29 of those years. I think that a lot of what I've shared and my guests have shared has been really helpful with a lot of folks throughout the world, but we all have to choose our own journey forward, our own path forward. And I hope for those of you that are ready to let go of inappropriate hopefulness can begin to do whatever you need to do to change and be healthier individually and in your relationship if you're choosing to stay in your relationship. And I hope that as you begin 2024, you can pick one, two, or three things that you want to work on individually to help you transform into the person that you want to be so that you can be your most authentic self. And I want to invite those of you who are not autistic or identify as neurotypical to join me and Sarah Swenson. We are doing a 4-week workshop called I Love My Partner and Still Struggle to Imagine a Healthy Future Together. The cost is $297. It's 4 weeks. We're going to start meeting on January 23rd and we'll meet every week for the next 3 weeks after that at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll meet for 90 minutes. It's a small group of folks. We have a few spots left, and if you need additional information about the workshop, feel free to email me at neurodiverselove, the number 4, the letter U, at gmail.com. I also want to share that I am doing or co-facilitating a support group with Jody Carlton. And that support group, we actually have 2 support groups that meet on the first Wednesday of the month. We have one at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then we do another one at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is a mixed neurotype support group, meaning you can be any neurotype, and it's for individuals, not for couples. So if you and your partner want to attend, you can attend at different times, but not together. That support group is $25, and you can go to Jody Carlton's website and look at the section on groups, and I'll put the link in the show notes, and you can register. I think we only have 1 or 2 slots available for January, but then we reopen the slots every single month, so it's not the same group of people attending every month. And if you haven't purchased a copy of the Neurodiverse Love cards, it's a digital download. Those are available for $11. And I also have created the Neurodiverse Love Conversation Card Workbook, which is the 52 questions from the card deck and another 252 questions in a workbook, and that is $12.97. And you can get all of those things on my website at neurodiverselove.com. I want to thank all of you for listening to the podcast, and I hope that this short podcast episode is helpful in some way. And I really do hope that 2024 is filled with healthy relationships, positive communication, a lot of space and grace and time for you as an individual and in your relationships with the people that you love and care about. And I hope that you'll do at least one or two things every week that bring you joy and peace. Because the more we can regulate our own nervous system and create peace and joy in our lives, the better partners we can be in our romantic relationships, the better parents we can be, the better friends we can be, and the better co-workers we can be. So thank you all for listening, and I look forward to talking to you again next week. Take care.